It's Wednesday, June 22nd, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. And Hoynesy, today we are talking about the first place Cleveland Guardians. We're actually saying that on a podcast, opening up with the first place Cleveland Guardians. They are in a tie with the Twins atop the American League Central Division standings, percentage points ahead, actually, and in first place. But as far back as the middle of May, they were 7.5 games back, and here we are. They've clawed all the way back to the top of the division standings.
Yeah, just a great run, Joe, and it's been highlighted by this road trip. 6-1 on this trip, sweep, you know, at Denver, take 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers, and they've come in here to Target Field and won the opener last night of a 3-game series. And they have won 17 of their last 22 games, Joe. They are rolling.
Yeah, it's crazy. All they have to do is win one of the last 2 games in Minnesota, and they could the least they could come home with is a 7-2 road trip. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't think anybody figured that. And the result of it is, you know, some big games coming up for them again and continuing in this stretch. Last night they did it in come from behind fashion again. And they got some help from some unusual or unexpected, I guess, places, guys that weren't even on the roster yesterday.
Yeah, the three guys that came up, you know, with, I guess I should say the 2 guys, Aaron Civale, you know, pitches 5 solid innings, 7 strikeouts, gives up a couple runs. Then Franmil Reyes kind of looked a lot like the Franmil Reyes we saw before he went on the injured list, what, 4 strikeouts, but he did hit a huge home run in the 8th inning, a 2-run homer that tied the score back at 5-5 after, you know, Eli Morgan had given up a 3-run dong and to put the Twins back in top. And who else did I miss? We got a Franmil and Civale. Jose Ramirez was back in the lineup.
And Andrés Giménez delivered in the 11th inning with the go-ahead run and an RBI single.
Yeah, and he continues to pound a baseball with runners in scoring position and late in games. He went into last night's game hitting .407 with runners in scoring position, .317 with 16 RBIs from the 6th inning on. You know, this is a dangerous man when the game is on the line from the 6th inning on.
And when he sees runners on base, I don't know if the approach is changing at all, but whatever he's doing is highly effective. And he continues to drive the ball and find that power as well. You know, we saw 2 base hits last night, but everything seems to indicate that this is a young man who's really figured it out at the plate, and he has real value there. We'll get into the All-Star debate later on as we, you know, as that's going to be a focus of the second half of this podcast. But as far as last night goes, there was nobody else you would want up at the plate in that position late in the game.
Yeah. And, you know, Francona said something interesting in the post game. You know, he said that Andres tends to swing at high fastballs, during the early part of the game. But when it gets late, you know, he lays off the fastball, the high fastball, and he, you know, he just makes solid contact. He's not trying to hit the ball 4 miles. You know, the game winning hit, what proved to be the game winning hit last night, was kind of a bloop single to short center field, but, you know, he got the job done, scored the automatic runner, and, you know, gave them a 6-5 lead in the 11th inning. And, you know, that scares me when you're the visiting team and you only score 1, you know, but they got Emmanuel Class A in there, and Target Field was just a little too big for that Miranda, the last pinch hitter that, you know, slammed Kwan against the left field wall there.
Yeah, that, you know, once you handed it over to Class A, you've given yourself at least a chance to close that out there with the 1-run lead. even with the runner at second base, you know, Class A was able to get the strikeout and the long fly ball out for the end of the game. But what was really interesting, you know, to me was just the way that they sort of, you know, used six bullpen arms in that game. They pieced it together after Class A, you know, or after Savali came out of the game. And Eli Morgan, you know, we're not used to seeing the home run given up and the runs given up early. But Trevor Stephan came in and, you know, he mowed through basically the heart of Minnesota's order, the 3-4-5 hitters, struck them all out after a walk.
Yeah, he was nails last night, Joe. You know, and, you know, Francona was saying, you know, we're seeing these guys grow up, you know, right in front of our eyes after the game. He said, you know, Stephan was, you know, pitching really kind of, he was wrapped in, he had kid gloves on him last year as a Rule 5 guy. Same with Henkes. You know, these are guys that were pitching in the fifth, sixth, and seventh, seventh inning. Now, you know, with the game on the line, Stephan, what, in 12 pitches, strikes out Correa, Kepler, and Sanchez, and you know, does it what with two sinkers? I mean, splitters, and maybe a fastball, I think, but three swinging strikes, and he just looked dominant out there. And
yeah,
that's not the guy we saw, you know, like a week or so ago.
Well, it was a stretch of the early season. Trevor Stephan was like that, and then for about a month there, he was off in the almost the whole month of May. He just seemed to be a little bit off. And then, you know, now he's sort of maybe pieced things together back, you know, found that fastball command, been able to get into a position where he can use the split finger fastball and really just be effective with it. I really liked that effort. I really liked Sam Henches' effort. Like you said, both of those guys, you know, growing up fast. And you know, even Angel De Los Santos coming in and sort of, you know, working out of a jam with after Savali left the game, all good positive signs. You know, just the number of relievers might be a little concerning for the rest of this series, but you know, there's guys that can now go back to back if they have to.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, they proved that I think in that, you know, we saw that from Class A. You know, in Denver, three straight saves, day off. Then he got the, you know, the save in Sunday in LA. Now he gets, you know, another day off and gets a save tonight. He's saved, you know, what, five, four? I'm trying to think. They're 6-1. I think he saved five of the six wins on this trip. He's just been, you know, he's been lights out. You know, Henkes was saying after the game, you know, I asked him, why are you guys 6-2 in extra innings this year? And he said, it all has to do with Class A. He goes, when you got a guy like that, that's going to slam the door, you're really, really confident. And, you know, on this trip, Joe, they're 3-0 in extra innings.
Yeah, that's it's impressive. And you look at the other records of some of the teams they've played, they're not as good as the Guardians have been in extra inning games so far. Offensively, we got a new look in the lineup. We had Stephen Kwan batting in the leadoff spot. Miles Straw dropped to the number 9 spot, and Kwan comes through with a 4-hit game.
Yeah, Kwan looked, you know, I wonder why they, you know, I was kind of, I didn't think Tito would make a change. You know, I thought he, you know, just really kind of rides his veteran guys. Well, I mean, the guys he, you know, he that he wants to be in the lineup in their position. But I think, you know, Straw just needed a break. You know, he's really been struggling. And, you know, June hasn't gotten any better than May. And, you know, after his hot start in April. So they made the switch. And Kwan had a, you know, big game. You know, Straw continued to struggle in the number 9 hole, but he can play center field. He's still playing center field. He hasn't let his batting average bother his defense. But Kwan's an exciting guy, Joe. Well, we're kind of riding a roller coaster with some of these young guys. You know, we saw Kwan win American League Rookie of the Year in April, then, you know, fade in May. And he's, you know, he's come back in June and looks like, you know, he looks like he's going to be a player here.
Yeah, you know, he still made rookie mistakes. He still got picked off on a after a hit, he was at first base and got picked off there. But, you know, you can live with that if he's still being productive. And even if the outs are productive, you'll live with whatever Stephen Kwan is able to do to try and set the table for guys like Ahmed Rosario and Jose Ramirez. Straw, they're going to give him time to work through what he's doing, because again, Tito loves what he does in center field. When the bat catches up to everything else in his game, things will be all right. But the message was sent earlier in the day when they had to find a spot for Framil Reyes, and rather than sending Richie Palacios down, they DFA'd Oscar Mercado, and Mercado's a guy that's been with the club, for what, 3 years now?
4 years.
Parts of four seasons. So the message is clear. If you're a veteran, if you're one of those sort of between guys and 4A veteran guys who's not producing, they're going to give kids a chance to come in and show themselves and show what they can do, because, this season is about learning what these kids can do.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen with Bobby Bradley, Zimmer, Chang, Logan Allen, those guys are gone. I mean, Bobby Bradley is playing in AAA, and Mercado might be too if they can't trade him. But I think he'll get traded. There's a lot of teams looking for outfielders. I think they'll be able to move Mercado. But yeah, Joe, that's a wake up call. This is, they're going young. And they gave some of these, kind of older veteran guys a chance to, see what they could do. And when they didn't, there's people pushing them from behind, and you either produce or you're gone, kind of.
Yeah. And you and I were talking, and, looking around the roster, who might be the next sort of veteran guy in line to possibly lose a spot if a young guy is pushing to get up here. There really aren't too many spots to look at that where else they can, cut a veteran guy. I think you need to keep Austin Hedges for that stability with the pitching staff, maybe for a little while, but that's about it. Everywhere else it's young, younger, and youngest.
Yeah. Maybe Rosario, but I think they like Rosario, but he could be a trade chip at the deadline.
Yeah. That's the only thing is, I don't think they cut Rosario like they have Chang and Bradley and Mercado. I think they try to flip him and maybe get something for him, but maybe not even necessarily something on the 40-man roster. Maybe some sort of prospect. Although that'd be hard. Anybody that a team would be willing to trade in order to acquire Ahmed Rosario would probably be somebody you'd have to put on the 40-man roster. A prospect close to being a guy who needs to be protected in that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Rosario's been productive. He's had a, a great June. He's hit well on his trip, played good defense. They need – I don't know if they can go all so young that they're – they got to have their IDs checked.
I was going to say somebody has to be able to show a driver's license to get them all into the bars, right? I mean, Ahmed Rosario might have to stay on the roster. But that's good. Ahmed Rosario has played well. He's provided some punch at the top of the lineup, but he's not an all-star. But we know who the all-stars right now on this team are. We know Shane Bieber is an all-star. We know Jose Ramirez is an all-star. The first round of results of the online balloting for the all-star game in Los Angeles, July 19th, was released yesterday after we recorded our podcast, and Jose Ramirez, as expected, is in position to at least make the next round of voting. Remember that they do it in two rounds. They do a preliminary round where they take the top three at each position, and then they vote again. They sort of reset the ballot, and you vote for only one of those three players to start in the game. I think there's no question that Ramirez and Bieber will be at the All-Star game. I think the other guys that are potential guys to get on that roster are Andrés Giménez and Emmanuel Clase. Giménez is number three right now in all-star voting. Let's start with Jose Ramirez and his competition there at third base, Rafael Devers. He trails Devers by 16,000 votes right now. Both of them have upwards of 720 some thousand votes apiece. That's a race that will probably, you know, go down to the last day to see how close it'll be. But right now, Devers is in front, and right now, actually, if you're looking at it and being honest, if you look at the numbers, purely the numbers, Devers is ahead in a lot of categories.
Yeah, definitely. Good player, great hitter. I don't know if he's the defender Jose is, but you know. But Devers mean more to the Red Sox than Ramirez mean to the Guardians? And I don't know if that goes into All-Star voting the way fans think, but when you look at it like that, you know, I think you have to favor Jose.
Right. Well, it's two things. It's the fan voting. It's a popularity contest. And if you're looking at Cleveland versus Boston, Boston fans are going to vote for their guy more than, you know, there's just more Boston fans than there are Cleveland fans. It's just a fact of the way it is. You can overwhelm that by having a charismatic guy like Jose Ramirez, who's, you know, sort of embraced by national media, and maybe that earns you a closer vote. But I still think the sheer number of things is going to give Boston an advantage there. What it's not is, and to your point, what you said, is there more value for Ramirez to Cleveland than Devers to Boston? That's the debate that we're having with Jose Ramirez versus Aaron Judge. You know, that's the MVP debate, and that's a separate debate from the All-Star. Who is the best third baseman in the American League right now is the debate we should be having on this. Don't look at MVP, how much he means to his team, and the qualifications for your vote, your BBWAA vote for at the end of the season that will go between, you know, either Ramirez or Judge. I think right now you have to look at the sheer numbers of the players who are playing third base in the American League. And right now, Rafael Devers leads in WAR. He's got the most hits in the league. He's actually more productive at the plate than Jose Ramirez. Now, you could also argue the other side of it, that Jose Ramirez doesn't get pitched to as much as Rafael Devers does because of what is around Jose Ramirez in their lineup. But I'm comfortable right now with the first round of voting indicating that Devers is ahead right now. If we get another week into this and Jose keeps producing and keeps hitting and you know, winning games for Cleveland, I think the votes should be a little closer. But I'm all right with, as long as he's in the top three, moving on to the next round that way.
Yeah, Joe, I think that's a good point. And I think another point we got to consider is, you know, Cleveland has played so fewer home games than anybody, you know, and I think that's, you know, fans come out at home. That's where, you know, they can vote at the ballpark. And I know they can vote online and all that.
I was going to say, that's an argument for the
that's a long time ago, isn't it?
When it was the paper ballots that they could take, but we haven't voted that way in several years, Hoynesy.
I'm behind the times.
but you're right. But exposure is one thing. That's another thing is, you know, if they're in the park, they get bombarded with the messages on the scoreboard. Hey, pick up your phone and vote now.
Yeah, because at Dodger Stadium, it was relentless. I mean, all they did was every ad, every pregame, you know, they had the pregame DJs on there, and that's all they did was talk about the All-Star game and you know, getting as many Dodgers on their team as possible, and, you know, spurring the fans on to vote.
Well, the game is there at Dodger Stadium, yeah. So that's probably one of the reasons as well. But if that's the case, then what must they be doing at Rogers Center? Because there's, you know, four Blue Jays players in position to at least make the next round of voting. And that sort of leads us into the next debate here is Andrés Giménez. Is he doing enough to warrant serious consideration for an All-Star appearance, even if he doesn't make it as the guy who gets voted in? You know, Altuve is going to get his share of votes. And as sick as that makes some people feel because of the cheating allegations, and you know it's easy to be an all-star when you know what pitches are coming. I think don't tell me that should go away, because that's never going to go away for me. I'm sorry, but it's never going to go away for me. And if you're telling me that Jose Altuve is a given, he's going to win that top spot, fine, whatever. They need to have more than one second baseman on that all-star roster. And if your debate right now is between Andrés Giménez and Santiago Espinal, who's the second baseman for Toronto, I think Andrés Giménez really, and we've already talked about it on this podcast, I think he's got a really good case for making that that roster.
Yeah, Espinal isn't like a household name, you know, so and either is, you know, Giménez, but Giménez is having a great year. You know, when you really look at his stats, you know, he's kind of come out of nowhere, basically. And, you know, sometimes those guys, you know, it takes them a year or so to get in front of the public eye and to, you know, kind of make a case for themselves. But he's doing that right now. And, with the All-Star games, there's so many ways to get in, you know, injured players, you know, even if you don't make the team, you aren't voted in, you know, you can, if you receive votes, you know, if your peers have voted for you, you know, depending on how you stack up in that vote, you can get in. So I think you're right, Joe. I think Giménez still has a chance. I don't know if it's a real good chance, but I think he's got a chance to get in there.
Well, let's go pure numbers from a purely statistical standpoint. Santiago Espinal batting .268, Andrés Giménez .305, on base percentage .321 for Santiago Espinal, .344 for Andrés Giménez. And the OPS, 727 for Santiago Espinal, 841 for Giménez. Giménez has more home runs, 7-5, more RBIs, 33-31, and more stolen bases, 5-3. Across the board, up front, just purely on those numbers, you would think Andrés Giménez gets the nod in terms of, if he's not going to be the starter, then he should definitely be there in uniform. Then you go to the next level of, you know, this is a kid who's batting .418 with runners in scoring position, and late and close, he's the last guy that an opponent wants to see step to the plate with runners on base. So I definitely think that's the debate just ended right there, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and he plays to the situation, Joe. I think, you know, when he plays to the scoreboard, you know, we've seen that time and time again. Even last night, you know, with his, you know, go ahead single, he gets that, then he steals second base, you know. And I mean, he's constantly putting himself in position either to you know, drive in a run or become that run that gets driven in. So, you know, he's a smart player. I think he's a little, you know, he understands the game, and we've seen that time and time again. And plus on defense, he's, you know, he's really, really good at second base, and that's probably not his best position.
Right. Just really quickly to wrap up, Emmanuel Clase, room for him as a closer if he continues on the trajectory that he's been on?
I think there's no doubt about it. I think he's an open and shut case. Love the what he's been doing. I think he's pitching like he's when he comes into the ninth inning or the last inning with the lead, he looks like he knows the game is over. Now, we've talked about this before. He's not striking everybody out like last year. The strikeout totals aren't there, but he's you know, inducing contact. He's throwing 101 miles an hour, and, you know, and Stephen Kwan caught that ball last night. So that keeps him in the running.
There you go. What did you think of Johan Duran, the 24-year-old who came out and was hitting 100 on the gun for Minnesota last night?
Oh my God. I was just thinking, this is like an arms race between the Twins and the Guardians. Okay. You got a guy that throws 100. We got a guy that throws 102, you know, they're just going to go back and forth for the rest of our lives. It's just going to escalate.
All right, Hoynesy, game two of the series continues tonight from Target Field. We got Tristan McKenzie on the mound. You'll have Angel Hernandez behind the plate. Should be a fun one.
Yeah, I think Angel had one of the games earlier, maybe at Dodger Stadium. Civil War did not break out, so I guess hopefully things remain calm tonight as well.
Yeah, okay. I looked up at the – I was like, is Angel Hernandez at first base last night? And I was like, yeah, because he got one of his calls overturned. The pickoff at first base got overturned late in the game. But then you realize, oh, yeah, he's going to be behind the plate after he's at first, in the first game. So how did they follow? He followed him from L.A. to Minnesota. I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, the same crew is here. So.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Hoynsie, we'll talk to you again tomorrow after game two of the series here on the Baseball Joe. Talk Podcast.
Take care, buddy.